Loving a narcissist is very difficult, and honestly, it hurts. I know from personal experience. See, I've dealt with several narcissists in toxic relationships in my own life, family members, friends, even a spouse. One thing I recall vividly from each of those relationships is I remember in each case the exact moment it became very clear to me that they just didn't feel the same way. There was no affection returned. Let me tell you, it was painful. Growing up, I was always under my mother's thumb, as in she was, as far as she was concerned, in control of every aspect of my life. She controlled my activities, my thoughts, my feelings, my ideas, everything. Since my first narcissist was a parent, I would develop some serious personal issues over time as a result of it. I remember feeling like anything I said or thought or felt was somehow less relevant or less real than what other people said, thought, or felt. I literally felt like I was not even a real person, or at least not as real as like everyone else around me. I remember getting a stomach ache every day on the way home from school, stressing out about it. When I was younger, I had a thing for a certain type of guy. I was seriously into these dark and disturbed types. You know, the rebel without a cause, the guy who wrote poetry, who was probably a starving artist of some kind, and who pretty much hated the whole world and like 99% of the people in it. He would always have some kind of cause he was super passionate about, and very often called people zombies or sheep. You know the guy, right? Being the codependent type that I would totally take pleasure in finding this kind of guy in dark corners of parties and gatherings or whatever, and making him my mission to get inside his head and make him like me. We would end up having these deep and intellectual conversations, so philosophical, and they left me feeling like I'd almost had a sort of religious experience. I'd be all googly-eyed, thinking he saw me, and that we were sort of connecting on some really deep level. The only thing was that after the first couple of meetings, I'd always be left feeling like I'd been duped, but I couldn't quite figure out why. I remember thinking I'd met my soulmate within a couple of weeks of meeting my ex. It was so crazy how much we had in common. He was an artist like I was, and he even wrote dark, brooding poetry like I did at the time. We seemed to like the same music, we both loved to dance. I mean, I could go on and on. And while I didn't think a whole bunch of him when I first met him, it wasn't long before I was telling a girlfriend that while we seemed so different, I really couldn't believe how much we had in common. Of course, I would later learn that he was probably a toxic narcissist, and relationships with narcissists tend to move really quickly, so within less than a year, we'd be living together and married with a baby on the way. It was around this time that I'd be smacked in the face with the fact that much of what he claimed we'd had in common was a complete fabrication. A few days after I started dating my ex-husband, things got intense and fast. One day he came to my apartment building and he stood outside yelling up to my window to get my attention. I had some kind of Romeo and Juliet moment right there. He made me feel like a princess in a tower. When he came up, we had this intense experience. We danced together alone in the apartment, and I literally felt like I was in some kind of amazing romantic movie. We had a small dinner together, and I felt so totally bonded to him as he read poetry he'd written for me. We talked philosophy and art and all the things. Later, we went out with a group of my friends to a local bar that had a band playing. On the dance floor, our bodies moved in rhythm, and they seemed to be moving like we were one. Honestly, it felt like even though we were surrounded by other people, we were the only two in the room. It seemed epic, like something out of a storybook. Later that night when we got home, let's just say the magic continued. This would be one of many nights where in hindsight, I would recognize that he had been idealizing me and that it was not, in fact, the storybook romance that I wanted it to be. Months later, there would be no sign of this romantic guy I'd originally met. He would become a completely different person who constantly devalued and demeaned me. Sometimes he'd do it directly, and sometimes it was more subtle, but in any case, I'd spend the rest of our relationship trying to find that guy who had swept me off my feet in the most dramatic way I'd ever experienced. As it turned out, he didn't really exist. Before I met my ex-husband, I am pretty sure I didn't have a jealous bone in my body. I mean, there might have been one or two brief moments of jealousy in relationships over the years, but nothing like I would experience with him. He was the type who would stare at other women openly when they walked past, literally. He would even flirt with my friends in front of me. And there would be little tells that not everyone would notice, little dog whistles in a way. For example, when we first started dating, he would say certain things when he flirted with me that maybe they sounded innocent if you didn't know exactly what he was doing, that he was flirting. For example, when I would say, "I'm sorry," he would say, "You're gonna be." And at the time, it didn't seem like much. Now, if you didn't know this was a flirt line, you might just think he was trying to be funny. But I knew what was really going on. And so when I'd witness him playing this game with my friends or other random women, well, it caused a lot of conflict. I wouldn't say anything in the moment because I didn't want to embarrass myself, but later I would confront him about it. And at that point, guess what? I'd be told I was crazy and he would start tearing me down, telling me I was always too jealous and that if I was going to accuse him of it, he might as well just go ahead and do it. Of course, this only led me to feel less secure in the relationship, and it got me walking on eggshells, which is exactly where he wanted me to be. During our relationship, I would catch him in a lot of somewhat compromising situations, which he'd always explain away, of course. It drove me insane. I became so obsessed and jealous that I would actually start to watch his eyes to see what he was looking at all the time. In hindsight, I'm shocked that I allowed myself to act this way, but it was such a pervasive way to manipulate me that I almost couldn't see past it. So much so that it followed me into my next relationship and it caused drama that just didn't need to be happening. I was eventually able to move past it, thankfully, but it took a whole lot longer than I would have liked. My ex was the king of crazy making. A couple days before our wedding, our best man and maid of honor, which was our entire wedding party, came to town. So we decided to go out and have our bachelor or bachelorette parties, which were really just a night out on the town with our individual friends. Well, he and his friend went one way and me and my friend went the other. And since my friend was a recovering alcoholic, we had a sober night out, which was fine with me. But then when my then fiance came home that night, he was so intoxicated that I'm pretty sure he didn't even know his own name. As you can imagine, it was not enjoyable for me being stone cold sober while he was totally messed up and being fully aware of everything that was actually going on. It was more than just worrying about his seemingly excessive level of intoxication though. It was also that I was overly concerned with what they had done on their night out. Now let me just be totally transparent with you here. I am not saying in any way that I was perfect. In fact, I admit to being a little too overly concerned with a lot of things back then. Honestly, I was really insecure about myself thanks to growing up with a toxic mother, and being that I was only 22 when we got married, I still had a lot of growing up to do. That, along with the fact that I instinctively didn't trust him any further than I could throw him, is probably why I insisted that we create rules for ourselves for that night out ahead of time. And of course, one of the things that we agreed on was that we wouldn't go to certain types of places. I'm sure you know what I mean. But in hindsight, I'm about 99% sure that he did go to one of those places that night and that he lied about it. Well, maybe lied isn't the right word, unless we're talking about a lie by omission. And if I'm being honest, part of me thinks that more could have happened that night than I really care to know about. But like always, he would tell me what he thought I wanted to hear and then just go ahead and do whatever he wanted. Ironically, somehow, that night would in so many ways start to become very representative of that relationship as a whole. And just like any time I'd catch him red-handed doing something he shouldn't or something he promised he wouldn't, he got really weird about everything that night. While a normal person might own up to what they had done, or at least, I don't know, try to discuss it, my ex was confusing. See, he was hard to read, and rather than send me running, that drew me in because I could read almost everyone else. So that meant that when he was guilty, he might or might not argue with me. He might or might not defend himself. He might try to say things that made me feel better in the moment, or he might say things that would hurt me more, depending on his mood and his goals at the moment. I never knew what he was going to do. What I mean is that at the beginning of the relationship, he was more likely to pretend to care how I felt, but as time progressed, there would be occasions where he'd pretend pretty hard that he cared, at least when it served him to do so. But he did this one thing that was totally perplexing to me, even when he was still in the idealization phase of the relationship. If I'd ask questions, especially about something that could somehow incriminate him or get him in trouble, he would literally just say nothing at all. Now, it wasn't exactly the silent treatment, but maybe it was a kind of stonewalling. It wasn't that he would not talk to me during these times, it was just that he wouldn't actually answer any of my totally valid questions. He'd either say nothing or he'd say something that was in no way an answer. So for example, if I would say, did you go to the strip club last night? He would say, well, I told you I wouldn't, but never actually say whether he did or didn't go. It drove me crazy. And I'm pretty sure that that was his intention the whole time. Now that I think about it, actually, it wasn't only when he was going to get in trouble that this particular narcissist wouldn't answer my questions. See, there were other times where I'd ask him a perfectly innocent question like, would you go with me to this event or could you come to this family thing with me? He would refuse to answer those questions. He'd say stuff like, we'll see, and then I couldn't make plans. During the first few weeks after I left my ex, I kept in close touch with him because not being aware of the no contact rule, I just didn't know any better. I even made it a point to go and visit him sometimes and also made sure he saw our son for a while, despite the fact that he had no car and no driver's license and no way to make it there himself. But he would always say these three words that made me feel both guilty and doubtful of my decision to leave, even though I knew for sure it was the right thing to do. What were those words? Well, he'd say, I miss you. But knowing now what I didn't know then, I understand that he was a toxic narcissist. So that led me to a natural question. Did he really miss me, or was something else going on there? About a year after my divorce was final, I got a call from my ex-mother-in-law letting me know that my ex was getting remarried. I was only mildly surprised, mostly that it had taken him almost 2 years to meet, successfully propose, and schedule a wedding with his would-be second wife. In hindsight, I'm actually kind of surprised it took him that long, because usually narcissists move much quicker. Still, I have absolutely no doubt that he was dating and being in love with someone, likely more than one person, shortly after I left him. But I didn't even start dating until the divorce was final, which within itself took a year after I left. Even though I didn't want this person back in any way, part of me felt some kind of way about the whole situation. It wasn't that I felt jealous, I felt confused. I felt like I wanted to contact this woman and tell her what she was in for, but if I'm being honest, I wanted to know how he was treating her. Was he being nice? Had he suddenly become the person I'd always wanted him to be? Had all the time and effort I spent trying to help him kind of get it together finally benefited someone, even if it wasn't me? Part of me hoped that he would be different for her, but the other part of me knew that he wouldn't. It would be about 5 years later that I'd finally have the opportunity to speak to this woman. When my now husband decided to adopt my oldest son, the one I'd had with my ex, I had to reach out to my ex, and he agreed to sign the papers because mostly it might mean that he wouldn't be on the hook for child support anymore. Anyway, understandably, despite the fact that she'd never spoken to or met my son because he'd spent literally no time at all with my ex, his wife at that time was quite concerned about the situation and showed up with him when I met him to sign the papers. Once everything had been resolved, she ended up calling me several times. We got along just fine. She wanted to talk about her husband and their relationship. I guess someone who understood. She wanted to know if her experiences were like mine, and it turned out that her marriage was nearly identical to mine, except maybe a little worse because she didn't tolerate as much of his crap as I had. She was 10 years older than me, and he was 8 years older than me. But I guess her strength led to his increasing intensity and frequency of manipulation and gaslighting, so either way, she ended up divorcing him not long after that. Now, he'd end up married twice more after that, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure he's still with his fourth wife. The one thing I felt worried about was that he would be better to someone who wasn't me. And after having the opportunity to talk to both his second and third wives, I learned the truth. He was the same person for them as he'd been for me. Turned out he didn't change. When I finally got the nerve to leave my ex-husband, there was this part of me that sort of wished that I could somehow make him realize exactly what it was that he'd lost. I wanted him to regret what he had done to me and how he'd affected my life long term. It was a little different when I went no contact with my mother. I wanted her to know that I was doing better without her in my life, if that makes any sense. In either case though, while I knew for sure that I didn't want them in my life anymore, I guess a part of me kind of wanted them to miss me, or at least to regret losing me. In fact, if I'm being honest, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that I really fully recognized myself as a whole person, rather than some watered down extension of someone else. And yes, I know it sounds silly, but it's true. I really think that the hardest, most painful part of growing up that way with a narcissist and later marrying another narcissist was that constant invalidation. This didn't end when I grew up and moved out. In fact, it would continue until I was 35 years old. I actually happened to be 35 years old the day I went no contact with my mother. When I went no contact with my mother, my decision was made in a moment of extreme distress. It was immediately after I had learned that she had done something that I would consider a huge and very unexpected betrayal. I had just written my first book. One day, I was sitting in my office, kind of crying, because I just got off the phone with a doctor who upset me a little bit. Well, his office upset me a little bit. And I had a knock on the door. And my oldest son screams, "Mom, somebody's at the door for you." So I went to the door, and it turns out that it is a lady from CPS, Child Protective Services. And she was there to tell me about how someone had filed a complaint against me saying I was neglecting my children, I was abusing them, I was not feeding them, blah, 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 blah. Well, obviously that wasn't true. And the lady came in, looked around the house, did all the stuff. And once she decided that we weren't in fact abusing or neglecting our children, she even talked to our children, then I felt vindicated, but also still kind of like, what in the heck happened? I was scared to death when this happened, you understand, because I've heard some horror stories. Well, anyway, I asked her, could I see the paper that she had in her hand that the report had been written down on or typed down on? So I went through the report, I read the report, then I came across the words that my oldest son had been raising his brothers and sisters, okay? Well, he didn't have brothers and sisters, he had a brother and a sister. So then I realized, I knew right then exactly what had happened, and it was that my mother had called CPS on me. And her reason was because, long story short, she was mad at me and so she made the call. I remember feeling completely blindsided and devastated in the moment that this happened. And the first thing I did was pick up the phone and I called my mother to confront her. In hindsight, I probably wouldn't have given her the satisfaction of doing that, but at the time I didn't fully understand exactly what I had been dealing with throughout my life. Anyway, when I told her that I knew what she had done, she began to freak out. She screamed and she yelled and she raged at me. And I pretty quickly told her never to call me again and hung up the phone. At the time, I didn't really know what going no contact meant, but I would later learn that I had somehow instinctively made the right choice in that moment. Before that, for my entire life, there was this deep, profound sense of obligation to her, and she made sure of that. I learned that her feelings, her thoughts, her ideas, etc., were more important and more real than my own. She taught me that I needed to keep her happy, and that I wouldn't be good enough ever because I couldn't be or say or do whatever it was that she thought I should. It never seemed to matter how hard I tried, even as an adult. But that day, everything changed. See, I had recognized that she had betrayed me in an unforgivable way that I never would have imagined. It woke me up, and fast. The very moment I realized what she had done, I almost physically felt something break inside of me. That seemingly indestructible cord of obligation that had always been there and that had always caused me to sort of bend to her will, it broke. In one single moment, I lost the ability to care how she felt, and more than that, I lost the fear of her. She had always intimated that if I stopped doing what she wanted or refused one too many times, well, she would abandon me, and then I'd have no one. I lived in that fear for 35 years. I could never have imagined, nor would I have believed, that she would stoop so low to hurt me. I can't even think of the words to describe how I felt. It was almost like that time I was running in the dark as a kid and I tripped over a branch, knocked the wind out of myself. I felt like I had the wind knocked out of me. But then I got mad. Well, not just mad. After years of being a people-pleasing, self-hating codependent, I was filled with blistering, blinding rage. You know the kind of soul-twisting, screaming, ugly rage that comes up from deep inside of you and nearly forces you to take swift action? The kind that causes you to get crystal clear on what you want and what you deserve real quick? Yeah, I was filled with what I now know is justified rage. I was indignant, and in that very instant, I was done. I went no contact and I haven't looked back. But it wasn't so simple. My mother, she wasn't done yet. She had been in control for 35 years and she wasn't about to give it up without a fight. First, she got very angry. Then, told a whole bunch of lies about me and spread malicious gossip to everyone in the extended family, as well as some of her friends. Over the next couple of weeks, I learned through the grapevine that the extended family had been talking about me in some pretty interesting ways. It seemed that they believed I would be back, and at the very least, that they'd see me for the holidays. Reportedly, they said that I was just being dramatic and begging for attention. In reality, I was done. And to be honest with you, I still am. But at the time, they were in denial, or so I thought. Later, I would learn that my mother had been playing the victim. She acted like she had absolutely no idea why I stopped talking to her, and she told people she was afraid that I would come and physically hurt her, despite the fact that I'd never even raised a hand to her or even been verbally aggressive, really. Of course, she omitted the fact that she had been very physically aggressive to me until I was 18. And later, she'd end up publishing my name in her little work newsletter, asking people to pray for me and my mental health issues. Someone told me that my mother had been using my name in a newsletter that she was sending out to around 300 people by mail for her work, saying that I had mental health issues and that people should pray for me. Yeah, well, that was taken care of with another quick email and a brief reminder that I happened to have a much bigger audience than she did, some of which included her people. It turned out that the threat of exposure was enough to stop the smearing, in this case anyway. After that, I heard through the grapevine that she was playing the victim, telling everyone how she had absolutely no idea why I wasn't talking to her after all she'd done for me. She minimized me, and she justified her own feelings by saying things like, she's always looking for attention. In fact, I was doing the opposite of that. I was actually looking for peace. I wanted nothing else from her. But a few months after I went fully no contact, I heard that she planned to send my brother over to my house during the holidays to straighten me out. The plan, according to the grapevine, was that he would just show up without calling, which was not acceptable to me. It was a sort of sneak attack they planned to straighten me out, apparently, or confront me for having gone no contact with the family. Well, I nipped that one in the bud. When I learned this, I sent a quick email explaining that he wasn't welcome and that if he did show up, I would have to call the police. Side note, my brother was involved in what my mother did, and that's why I felt this way. It wasn't just that I was randomly kicking members of my family out of my life. Can you relate? Maybe you found yourself free of a narcissist recently, one who was in your life every day and who gaslighted you, manipulated you like there was no tomorrow, and who seemed to live to bring you grief. And now that they're gone, you kind of hate to admit it, but there might just be a tiny little part of you that misses that person, despite the fact that they took you for granted, despite the fact that they minimized you and made you feel like you were completely worthless. You've done your research, though, and you recognize that you probably miss the narcissist because of something called a trauma bond, which was the result of the ongoing cycles of your toxic relationship. You might even already know that going through cycles such as these cycles of intermittent reinforcement, which is ongoing punishment and reward, sprinkled with tiny crumbs of affection here and there to keep you hooked, well, that's going to cause the trauma bond to make you feel almost like an addict who has gone cold turkey on their drug of choice when the narcissist is no longer in your life. So have you ever found yourself wishing the narcissist would regret losing you or wanting them to miss you once you are gone? If so, you're going to want to stick around because I totally get how you feel here. And who could blame you for feeling like you want them to suffer a little? I mean, after all, they were horrible to you. And all you did was everything in your power to make them happy. In many cases, you feel like they've kind of ruined your life and maybe even affected it in so many ways that you can't undo. If nothing else, you spent far too long trying to fix the unfixable. And you're rightfully angry. It's justified anger. But the first thing we have to recognize when it comes to narcissists is that what they miss when they miss you isn't so much as you as an individual, but what you did for them. They miss you as a source of narcissistic supply, which, in case you're new around here, means that you offered them certain things, attention, validation, maybe even admiration. You know, all the supply they needed to feed their ego. Plus, they might miss the things that you did to help them take care of themselves and their lives. Your cooking, your cleaning, taking care of the bills, business, things like that. But is it even possible for them to miss you as an individual? To miss you for yourself? Sadly, the answer is no, at least not in the same way that a normal person might miss you. I mean, don't get me wrong, they'll definitely notice your absence in their lives because you're not giving them all the things you did before. You're not doing all the things for them. They will miss having you as their own personal emotional garbage dumpster. They will miss your money or your attention or your lovemaking. They will miss the status or the social standing you offered them. They might even miss the supply that your family and your friends may have given them if they haven't completely pushed them all away from you by now in an attempt to isolate you. But as much as a part of you wants the narcissist to miss you, it doesn't exactly happen the way we want it to. Rather than longing for you and missing you, they long for things like your services or the benefits they get out of the relationship. Here's a good way to look at it. For the average toxic narcissist, the discard leads to a sort of out of sight, out of mind thing. They don't see you as a whole person, but as an extension of themselves. Their perception of relationships is totally out of whack. It's not the same as yours or mine. They see previous relationships kind of like we see our cell phones. Sure, when we first get our smartphones, they are amazingly new and shiny and fast. They have new features. They do all the cool stuff. But over time, they get overloaded and they start glitching here and there. Well, then we notice that there's some new app we're dying to try and it won't work on our phone. Before long, we hear about a newer, faster model that recently came out and we think, yay. And before we can say boo, we're at the Verizon store casually joking with the cute salesperson as we sign on the dotted line. We're getting that new phone, by golly, and we're not sad about it. We're not sad about the fact that we're no longer going to use the old phone. I mean, sure, we might miss that sparkly case we bought for it, or we might even miss that little clip-on stylus we paid extra for. But in general, do we sit around crying about our old smartphones? No, we don't. We just replace them without a second thought. That's exactly how narcissists see relationships. And we all know that they're infamous for sort of revisiting old relationships, right? But you have to know that for a narcissist, it's never about how amazing you might be. It's always about what they can get from you in the form of narcissistic supply. Don't confuse that with the idea that they miss you or that they feel anything real. Maybe here's a better way to look at it. Let's say you're just a little bit addicted to ice cream. You've been trying to quit eating it, you know, but one day you find yourself really needing a fix. Just then you hear the ice cream truck coming down the street. What luck, you think? I was just craving ice cream. So you go outside and you stand there with your money. Your excitement rises as the ice cream truck music gets a little closer and a little closer. And as it approaches, you notice, hey, that's not the same ice cream truck that usually comes through my neighborhood. At that point, do you turn away and do you go back inside if the truck isn't the truck you expected to see? Of course not. You go and you get your ice cream. That's because you're not thinking in that moment of the specific ice cream truck at all. You're only thinking of the delicious ice cream you're about to indulge in. So basically, it's what it can provide, not the truck itself. You can, and you would, get your ice cream fixed from any ice cream truck, you see? So in this example, you're the truck and the ice cream is Narcissistic Supply. Bottom line is they aren't gonna miss you for you. However, what they do miss is the ice cream or the supply. That is, of course, if they don't end up getting it from somewhere else, in which case, if they're able to move on and get their narcissistic supply elsewhere, then they most definitely will appear to forget that you exist. I mean, they will certainly use you as a weapon against the new supply if that's of any comfort to you. So if the new supply folds their laundry wrong in their opinion, and you did it right because they yelled at you for years about it or whatever, well, they're gonna throw this in the new supply's face. But again, that's about what you're doing for them, not about who you are. So how can you make the narcissist miss you? How can you make them regret losing you? Well, we have established already that the only thing narcissists miss about you is that supply that you give them or gave them. And then there's one thing that the narcissist regrets about losing you. And sadly, it is that they didn't take even more from you before they did. They don't regret the way they treated you. They don't regret the way they discarded you. And even if you discarded them, they don't regret what they did to cause you to do that. But there is one way that you can cause a narcissist to think they're missing out on you after all. And it's a little easier than you might think. So here's how you make a narcissist miss you. First, you remove yourself. Reduce or eliminate any contact that you have with them following the discard. So just stop engaging with them on any level that isn't absolutely necessary. If possible, obviously go completely no contact and remove them from your life. If that's not possible, just deal with them as much as you absolutely have to. So if you have kids together, only communicate with them about the kids and the business of raising them. No emotion, no kindness, just black and white facts and information. Only what's necessary to do your pickups, your drop-offs, any medical information you need to share with them, and stuff like that. Next, focus on you. Now, once you've started to do the low or no contact thing, you're gonna wanna start to focus on taking care of yourself. The fact is that during your relationship with a narcissist, probably you lost yourself, if you ever fully understood yourself before anyway. And now would be a perfect time to start getting to know yourself for the first time or again. Figure out what you like and what makes you happy. Find out what your passions are if you don't already know and indulge in them. Throw yourself into a fun project or something that makes you want to get up and out of bed in the morning. Imagine what your ideal life would look like and start taking steps to create it now. Next up, fix what's broken. If there is something that you aren't loving about yourself right now, that it is possible to change or you're capable of changing, here's an ideal time to do this. Maybe you want to lose a few pounds, or maybe you want to increase your self-esteem or change your hair. Maybe you want to get better at keeping up on your housework, or you want to start working out or reading or going to church again. Whatever it is that you've been meaning to do that you were too busy to do because you had the narcissist, that's going to make you feel more complete and happy, we'll start working on it one tiny baby step at a time. Even just researching your desired result can be a great way to start moving in the right direction. No baby step is too small. That brings me to number three, get clear on what you deserve. You spent a long time feeling worthless thanks to the narcissist and their abuse. Now is a great time to really take a good hard look at this whole situation. Be honest with yourself. Did you really deserve the way they treated you? Was any of it really your fault? Listen, I can tell you with all certainty that you did not deserve that. And how do I know? Because no one deserves to be treated the way a narcissist treats the people closest to them. And chances are that you're a kind, compassionate, and even giving person who loves really hard, which the narcissist obviously knew when they met you, and that's part of the reason they sucked you in the first place and managed to keep you around as long as they did. Let me remind you that you deserve to be loved, to feel safe, and to not be scared in your own home, at the very least. And you deserve to be loved in the same way that you would love someone else. What you don't deserve is to be taken advantage of, abused, and treated like you don't matter, because my friend, you do matter. Your thoughts, your feelings, your ideas, they're real, and they are worth hearing, and they are worth sharing. Please don't forget that. Number four, live like no one's watching. Yeah. Well, you might be tempted to show off your newfound awesomeness once you do get there, or to send the narcissist a little message letting them know how much better you're doing. Don't bother. The truth is that their response, if any, is only going to annoy and frustrate you. Worse, they might try to hoover you, as in suck you back in, so they can get more supply from you now that they can see you're sort of recharging yourself. So rather than sitting around wondering if they're missing you, why don't you try to live like they don't matter? Live like they never even existed. Find ways to make yourself happy and find ways to make yourself feel amazing and embrace them. Truly, now is the time you can actually begin to create the life you've always wanted, or maybe the life you couldn't have imagined before. You can baby step your way there, and you can't lose. Meanwhile, the narcissist will be fully aware of the fact that you no longer want or need them because you will be too busy living your amazing life. And the cherry on top of that little ice cream sundae will be the fact that you will be so busy living this sweet life, you might even forget that you ever miss them eventually. And that, my friend, is the ultimate way to get any sort of revenge on the narcissist, to live your life well and without them. You deserve that. This brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, have you ever wished you could make a narcissist miss you after the discard? If so, how'd it work out for you? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, and share your experiences in the comments section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life, and hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm going to leave for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.